Welcome to the niche.
Hi.
We've got our little. Got
what
our
was
new,
that? What was that little?
A bit of a,
yeah.
I don't know. We're here in our new. Let's call it a new studio.
Yeah.
Because it kind of is. We've moved from the couch, which is about 2 or 3 meters that way.
Uh huh.
We've got our own. Got new chairs.
Mm-hmm.
Got a new table full of snacks and wines and. So
and this lovely little spinning dish
from Vinny's. That was $6. Listen, you know, sponsors Vinny's, but like free plug for you. They've got some good shit in Vinny's and it's cheap.
Yeah.
That was $6 and that's Maxwell Williams.
Oh,
that's,
hello.
A quality brand. $6, a little carousel, four little pockets for four various snacks. One of them is occupied by coins for the innuendo jar.
Which, honestly, we owe that jar because we were going off just now.
Yeah.
We were going absolutely off.
I think we need to position that more front of mind so that that's easy to access.
I'm going to move it now. Hang on.
All right. So, we're here in our new little studio. And in fact, we were considering having some video because we've got some capacity for video here, but we've realized that it's a bit too hot and sweaty.
I'm so fucking sweaty. I'm sitting in a pool of my own sweat.
Ooh.
I promise you, it's not in a good way.
So, we've decided not to record video, but we will at some point record some video when, look.
When the aircon
this
is
the aircon is coming. In 1 week's time, the aircon will be here and then all of our problems will be solved.
Do you know, I think we received a flash fiction about air conditioning.
Oh, did we?
And I'm feeling that way right now.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know.
We've got a lot to talk about, a hell of a lot. I've been drinking, as you may be able to tell.
Yeah, we gathered.
And we've got like 4 or 5 topics that I'm really keen to delve into. And I think we'll probably break these into multiple niche episodes because you know how it be when we talk and talk and talk?
We
and,
do a little, yeah. We've been known.
Yeah. So, I'm going to start with, look, last time we spoke, because I've recently edited this, you were talking about your Tasty Treats and Mashington Mansion addiction.
It wasn't even called Tasty Treats. It was called something completely different.
No, I called it Fruity Juice or something.
No, it was Fruity something. Oh, I don't even want to remember.
Okay. Are you still addicted is my first question.
No. Do you know what? Yeah. I've also deleted Twitter, which some people might be aware of because, you know, I did a big dramatic exit of Twitter. Mm. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good not being on Twitter. I didn't actually realize because I'm still on everything else. Mm. So, it's not like I'm doing a social media diet or anything.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel so much lighter. I mean, I do think Twitter is quite a full-on place with a lot of political stuff, a lot of dark stuff, like a lot of reposting of, you know, some pretty awful stuff, which is not my vibe.
Mm.
I'm just there to chat with writer friends. That's all I want. But not just that. It's just having multiple apps that you just constantly switch between. Like, I'm in this one and now I'm in that one. Now I'm back to this one. Now I'm back to that. The fewer you have, the more likely you are to put your phone back down.
Yeah.
So I was ready to be putting my phone down and, yeah, I think it's working. But, yeah, I still have Mashington Mansion. That's my
thing. Oh, you do? That's your thing?
Yeah.
You see, but there's no agency, right? You just choose the first thing or are you back to your
No, well, ways? There's a game in Mashington Mansion that you have to have some strategy to win. Mm-hmm. The sort of Candy Crush equivalent sort of situation.
Mm. Well, look, we spoke about this last time, so you're allowed your little brain rot.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your breakup with Twitter. And when someone breaks up with their longtime partner that you've hated the whole time, now's my time to like shit on Twitter. I've never understood Twitter. Like I've never connected with it in any way. And this is the problem I have with all social media.
Because you're antisocial.
No, it's not. It's because I'm actually social. And all of these platforms feed you shit that's not what you want to see.
Yeah.
And you can't stop it. And like you said,
your feed. You want to see that.
No. Listen, do not badmouth TikTok because that's a different story, right? TikTok
it is, my friend. And not in a good way.
No, but Twitter, like it.
Look, no, you're right.
You shouldn't have a platform where it gives you shit that you don't want to see. Like you should be able to say, no, I don't want to see that. Like, can you give me the shit that I want to see? And it works against them because I'm not there because I don't want to go on there and have like, this is what I recommend to you. You don't know me, bitch, all right? Don't tell me what you recommend.
Sorry, what were you saying about being actually social?
What I'm saying is like, I go, okay.
Actually aggressive.
When I go on Facebook, for example, I go feeds friends and I see what my friends are doing. And when I go on Instagram, I go following on the app. Yeah. And I can see what people I actually follow.
You can do that on Twitter as well, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, but it's annoying. But in all these, in fact, all these platforms, and that's why I don't go on them too often, it's annoying.
Yeah.
Like, just let me set that as my default, because I won't go on there if you're giving me all this other shit.
Yeah, but you are the one human being. Well, you and me now. Like, I'll be real with you. I've made real human friends on Twitter.
Mm.
I have made real friends who I've met in person, and I love it. I love that. And, you know, initially your feed is kind of more narrow and you're talking just to other writers or whatever it might be that's your interest and connecting that way. But what I find now, myself included, by the way, that when you get on social media, you're just self-promoting.
Mm.
There's not a lot of connection going on. I love the moments where there is connection and we're talking about our comp, which I guess is self-promotion, but I feel like I'm following people's writing journeys and celebrating their wins with them. And it may not be our comp. It might be the other things that they're doing or publications that they're in, or and I'm reading their stories that they've posted. And I love that aspect, but it's just such a small drop in the ocean of the bullshit propaganda machine that we're all getting sucked into. And that's not Twitter specific, that's social media as a fucked up kind of mind control thing where they know exactly how to manipulate you into staying on their app forever. And it's too effective and I hate it. So and that's why I'm not on TikTok, because I spent 5 seconds on there and I was addicted immediately and it was so that's problematic.
Oh my god. But like that's the thing. We've all got our own. Look, I'm immune to Twitter, but I'm not immune to TikTok, and I'm not immune to YouTube. Like, and that's another one. Like, you get recommended videos, and it's more longer form, and it's more longer. What am I fucking spitting tautologies? It's longer form, and I'm not above it. Is what I'm saying. But good riddance, Twitter. I'm glad you got rid of it.
Yeah,
Elon, I do feel better. A big one.
Yeah, I think he probably does occasionally. Do you reckon?
You know. He's getting it. Let's put it that way.
He's giving it.
14 kids.
He's giving it.
He's spreading his seed. He's like, he's making it rain. In a way that I would prefer not to imagine.
Well, then why say it? That came from your brain.
I'm sorry. I don't control my brain. Okay. On that note, let's pivot to the next topic of conversation, which is Wuthering Heights, the new Wuthering Heights movie starring two Australians.
Two Queenslanders of all the places.
Margot Robbie and the other dude,
Jacob Elordi.
And I haven't seen this. You've seen it.
I saw it last night.
My impressions of this movie are, this is my expectations because.
Listen, mansplain to me the movie when you haven't even fucking seen it.
Okay, well, let me talk about it. I believe, from what I've absorbed about this movie, it's not at all like the book, right? So if you're going in there expecting accuracy, you're going to be sorely disappointed.
Oh, big time.
I've seen the one scene that they play on YouTube, which is the one where they go, Margot Robbie gets introduced to her new room where it's like all her skin.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and
I do
her,
know.
All her freckles and things.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't in the book, as far as I recall.
Let me just try and think back. So, skin walls.
So I feel it's going to be a style over substance kind of thing. But I also feel like if you know that and you go into it, maybe it's good on its own terms rather than being about like the Wuthering Heights book. So maybe if you disconnect from – so you tell me. Now it's your turn to Amanda Splane.
Okay. I love to.
Is it good despite its failings, or maybe it doesn't have failings? I don't know. You haven't told me about it.
Well, I mean, you haven't let me. You've just been talking.
As I've said, I've been drinking a bit.
No, listen, you are, and I'll say it for the second time tonight, absolutely right. I think I'm done.
These together and.
Okay. We'll just let that one hang. So to speak, pay the jar. I can't be bothered leaning over there.
It's
even
too far.
With the, it's a lovely spinning plate.
Thank you.
So yes, you know, I went into it knowing that the criticism was that it was not true to the book, and you know, we have had that whole episode of Mores, our regular episode from quite some time ago.
It was episode 11 or something, or 12, like
early,
that's a long time ago,
early days, where we talked about Wuthering Heights, the book. And also a couple of movie adaptations as well. And, you know, I was a bit sensitive at that time for it to be authentic and getting frustrated that it wasn't, and in particular lamenting the casting of Heathcliff and this sort of thing. So I listened to that episode again between last night and today just to kind of refresh my memory on what I thought about it. And I wasn't scathing by any means, you know, about it not being true to the book. I accept and appreciate how you could never fit that book into a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You just couldn't.
You said that in the episode. I think you said like it should be a TV series.
It should. I maintain that. It absolutely should be a TV series. But nevertheless, as a movie, you've got to pick and choose what you're going to show. And I think it's a story worth telling and retelling and being able to have artistic license over. I still believe that casting is a huge component that has been fucked up repeatedly. I still believe that. But get this, okay? I will say I'm not sure that Margot Robbie was the right choice.
Okay.
Love her to death. She did some things great, but her accent was distractingly bad.
Oh, she did British accent?
Yes, and it was really bad. Love her to death. Barbie, fucking epic. But and, you know, looks-wise and how she carried herself, I think, worked really well. But, yeah, the accent was distractingly bad. Jacob Elordi did the accent amazingly from my perspective. I mean, I don't know the Yorkshire accent well enough to sort of get when he's dipping into Australian accent.
Yeah.
It sounded pretty good to me. And he did the brooding thing really well. And he is part Spanish. Hooray! Like, we actually have a part Spanish Heathcliff. Holy shit. Wow. Yeah. So, tick, tick, tick. And I'll get to him in a minute because I'm still not sure he was 100% the right choice, but we're getting there. We're moving in the right direction. But guess who was baby Heathcliff? Young Heathcliff. So, we start with the guess.
Guess.
Who's a troubled teen?
Oh, is it Timothy Chalamet?
It is not, thank fuck.
A troubled teen.
Yeah.
I don't know any teens.
Who plays a really problematic, dark, twisted boy?
Is it the adolescent kid?
Yes.
Wow.
It's him. It's Jamie. Oh, my God. Perfect casting. Yeah. Holy shit. And he actually kind of does look a little bit like a baby Jacob Elordi. Right, so it kind of worked. Yeah. Like, not normally, but in this context, they made it work. He looked like him young. And he was so good. Of course he was, because he's fucking amazing. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, my God, this is amazing casting. I was very, very excited about that. And I was excited to tell you that he got another perfect role.
Mm.
To go from adolescence to that is just like chef's kiss, like amazing.
He's got a bright future ahead of him.
Of playing really, really problematic characters.
Oh.
So that was all very exciting. And so, you know, I'll forgive the Margot Robbie casting, I guess.
Mm. So what about the story, though? So it was different to
big time. Yes. Okay. So, again, you've got to pick and choose what you're actually going to show.
Mm.
And in this case, they just completely deleted the next generation.
Yeah, as you would.
As you kind of – you've got to pick and choose. So, yeah, I get that. But they also deleted several other very crucial characters as a result.
Mm.
So they deleted the Linton Sr. parents. Isabella was now a ward of Edgar Linton instead of his sister.
Mm.
Why are you smirking?
Sorry, I was just thinking about something. Go on.
What are you fucking thinking about?
Nothing. I'll say it later. Keep going.
Jesus. Okay. So the senior Lintons were gone, which, you know, that's fine by the by. But, yeah, Isabella was not Edgar's sister anymore. She was his ward.
Mm-hmm.
And very strange, but we'll get to that. And then Kathy didn't have a brother anymore.
Mm.
And therefore, you know, he wouldn't have been able to have his children that were involved, and her dad was the problematic gambler. And
But look, side note, I'm all up for some simplification. Just make it like
distill it. Say it again because I'm bumping shit.
It doesn't matter. Like, it's the niche, whatever. I'm all up for simplifying. Just bump it again, why don't you? Yeah, exactly.
What you do in the privacy of your own niche is
bump microphones and bump microphones. Anyway.
Good luck.
What I was talking about. Yeah, simplify.
Yeah, 100%. You've got to refine down to the story
because
you want to tell.
There is a post single effect argument to be made about Wuthering Heights. Like, take the bits that point to this thing that you want to express and distill the whole story down. And there are a lot of extraneous characters from that perspective. It's written in the 18th century and the 19th century. It's a different style. It's a different time. And it's written in a time when people had fucking time to read books.
Yeah.
And now people have time to watch a movie for an hour and a half. I'm all for it from that perspective. Like, we've seen Wuthering Heights. We've read Wuthering Heights.
Give us something new.
Give us something different.
Absolutely. And bring it up to date. And that's what I felt this adaptation really did really well.
Mm.
It's like you talk about post-single effect.
Mm.
And the single effect of Wuthering Heights is fucking despair, depravity. Like, it's just everything is going to go to shit in the worst possible way.
Yeah.
And I feel like this adaptation did that in a way that felt very modern, even though the story is still set in this kind of.
Did you see the director's other movies like Saltburn?
No.
Yeah, that was good. It had Jacob Elordi as well. Okay. Everyone said it was like a ripoff of Talented Mr. Ripley, which I've never seen. So okay. For me, it felt original. And like there were a couple of scenes in that were pretty fucked up, which I enjoy.
Yes. You listen, here's the headline. You would fucking love this movie so much. And the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, oh my God, Ed's going to love this so much. And there is one scene in particular that I know you're going to love.
Oh. Does Margot Robbie get him out? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Okay.
You'll see. Anyway, well, she practically does, if that helps. Right. No, you're going to love it. And it's so fucking dark. Oh my God, it's so depressing. You are going to absolutely love it. But okay, here's the thing though. So what it does is it brings this whole BDSM thing in. It brings in like Isabella is now I don't want to ruin it for you.
Okay.
Like when the movie begins, it begins in this really fucked up way, like really, really fucked up way. And that just sets the tone. And we talk about in flash fiction, right? Setting the tone and like very early in your story and then maintaining that tone. Holy shit. That is like done very well in this particular story. And it is something that's not in the book. It's completely just in the screenwriter's imagination, which is alarming, but it absolutely sets the tone beautifully. So I think that BDSM stuff is great for modernizing it in a way. And I'm sure BDSM has existed since forever and that's not the point, but that wasn't something that could have appeared in a book, in a novel at that time. You know, like what was said in Wuthering Heights was extreme for the time, but still quite restrained. But now you need to level that up and be a bit more in your face with what's going on. And it fit. It made sense. But on top of that, we've also got this trauma that's happening. So these characters are going through this insane trauma. And I'm like, it's awful, obviously. But I'm like, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
These characters are fucked up.
Yeah.
Why are they fucked up? In the book, they just are. In the movie, it's like, oh, fair enough. Like they get given these backstories that justify why they are so messed up and why they are so toxic. And it includes Nellie too, who in the book never really gets her own storyline. She's just a bit of a gossip. In the movie, she's got her own arc. Like she's got her own thing going on, explaining why she does what she does and how she impacts the story, because of course she does, you know, Nellie always impacted the story. And so I really loved that. I loved that it was actually making it richer. It was giving us more than what the book had in some ways, and making me appreciate the book in a new way by sort of thinking, well, why were these characters so messed up? Well, yeah, they probably had some fucking trauma. Can we give them some sympathy? Not just be like, oh, they're bad to the core.
Yeah.
Well, why?
But like that's a good point, because trauma in a 19th century novel is different from trauma today. Like we have a lot of we're exposed to a lot of shit now.
Well, back then you were just expected to be like, well, that's just life.
Yeah, yeah.
And you probably didn't know. You didn't have the internet to tell you what was toxic and what was gaslighting and what was, you know, traumatic. You were just like, well, that was not ideal what happened to me today, but Got to get on with it.
Yeah, but I feel like our sensitivity is pretty low, and you know, I feel like we need to be given something that's pretty fucked up in order for us to be like, whoa, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
Because like, oh, whatever, you're homeless and poor.
Like, and you were beaten like a dog.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
I've seen that movie already. Like, give me something more.
And they do give more, but it didn't feel... To me, I mean, I'm only giving my own opinion and people are entitled to their own, but it didn't feel like exploitative or anything. It didn't feel like for the sake of drama. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
It felt like, no, that actually makes perfect sense. That probably did happen, or something like it probably did happen for these children to grow up so entwined with each other, because they had to lean on each other, you know. I felt that was like a much richer experience than the book. So you can say, oh, it didn't follow the book, and I get it. It didn't, and it never said it was going to, basically. Yeah. But that was a value add, and I love that. I love, you know, this artist, the screenwriter and the director, they've made it their own.
Yeah.
Great. We've already got the original.
100%. I agree with that. And I don't like when people say, like, this didn't follow the book. All right, you've got the book. Read the book.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes there's a time and a place. Maybe it's the first adaptation. Yeah. And, like, it's Harry Potter or whatever. Like, yeah. It's the first time it's been made into a movie. Like, be exact so we can see it come to life. But, like, if it's the third or the fourth, like, fucking have some fun with it.
Oh, it's like the 50th by this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, bring it to a modern audience and help them appreciate this classic literature.
Mm.
Just some other things I loved about it, because, like, just little treats that this movie added that weren't there before. Mm. I think this movie finally answers once and for all the question of which came first, the chicken or the egg.
Oh, all right.
Oh, it's the egg. There is some sexy egg.
That is so intriguing to me right now.
We've come out of Flesh Fiction, and sexy egg is just, like, fine. Totally normal to me at this point.
The egg comes before the chicken.
It sure does.
All right.
Look, there's no chicken.
Listen, Saltburn.
There's just egg.
You haven't seen Saltburn.
No.
But at one, spoilers. At one point, the main character, look, it's been a while since I've seen this movie, so details are a bit foggy, but main character is so in love with this woman who's died that he sticks his dick into the ground and fucks, like, her grave.
Yeah, right. That's very Heathcliff behavior.
Yeah. So I know what this director is capable of,
and
I like it.
Okay. Well, you were sort of saying it was a little bit derivative of maybe another movie.
Which I haven't seen, so I can't comment on that.
Look, I will say, and this is another big seller for you if I haven't sold it already for you, I feel that this adaptation of Wuthering Heights was maybe a little bit derivative of Poor Things.
Oh, really? Interesting.
A Margot Robbie version of Poor Things. And in the sense that, and I mean, you saw The Skin Wall, just some of that really kind of absurd but dark. And
the Frankenstein angle? Or?
Not Frankenstein specifically, more the aesthetic of it.
Yeah.
Like the real bright, bold colors, but everything's a bit wrong and off. Yeah. And the skin wall wouldn't be out of place in Poor Things. Like, just, I don't know, just kind of off and wrong, and but gaudy and beautiful.
Yeah.
And the sets were just colour, so much colour all the time, like the internal sets.
Mm.
When Kathy moves to Thrushcross Grange to marry Edgar Linton, she's basically living in a palace, and it's just all bright red and bright green and gold and pink and just crazy, which is beautiful to watch. I would say maybe it went a little bit OTT on that, but also I loved it. I think maybe dialing it back might have been nice at times, but it's beautiful to watch. Like, you're happy to watch something really elaborate and over the top, like, which is what Wuthering Heights is, right? Like, it's so over dramatic and
just fucking go for it.
But I mean, the original Wuthering Heights feels much more gray, right? It's just always raining and everything's dull and gray and dark. And we do have that aspect in this film as well, of course. But one thing I will say as a criticism, like, no one ever seems fucking cold. It'd be so fucking cold. Well, why aren't you cold?
Don't have to wear their corsets and shit.
Yeah, like, but like, you're out on the wily, windy moors.
Yeah.
And you're wearing, like, your top half is basically naked. Surely you're cold.
Yeah.
And they're getting rained on constantly. And here's another thing.
Wet.
This is a criticism, right? Because you know the dossier.
I do.
You know it well. We'll get to that. Mm. But one of the things in the dossier is the infamous wet shirt. The wet shirt, the Mr. Darcy wet shirt.
Yeah.
The Bridgerton wet shirt. They go so hard on the fucking wet shirt in this with Jacob Elordi. His shirt is just constantly wet, constantly. Oh. And I'm here to say, didn't love it.
Okay.
So something broke there
because
that's meant to be just tick. And I feel like the director leaned on that as if, like, all we need to do is just hose him off and we're going to be fine. Like, no, I wasn't buying it. I need my wet shirt to come from a place of truth.
Yeah. You don't want to be manipulated into –
you know,
into anything.
Yeah, as a woman. Into finding
you just
someone
be
hot.
Like, no, it has to be surprising.
It needs to be authentic wet shirt. And
what if he'd clenched his hand randomly? Or like,
oh, I wouldn't have bought
what
it.
What if he'd pulled out an umbrella, perchance?
Well, now you're talking.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll get to the whole dossier discussion. I don't know how to pronounce that word. Is it dossier or dossier?
I think you can just say it in an Australian accent or you can attempt a French accent.
Let's say a dossier.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go
dossier.
For it.
We'll get to that whole discussion separately. Is there anything else you wanted to say about Wuthering Heights?
Fuck yeah. I've got still
okay,
a list.
Go for it.
Stuff. I've got my
notes. I was
trying
to wrap shit out.
Well, you know, I will.
Go.
Okay. So, a couple of other things. This movie had There's some more fresh stuff that didn't appear in the book, which was, so Isabella is not quite right, you might say. I'm not sure exactly what the director's intentions were around, you know, what exactly is going on for Isabella. But yeah, she comes across as very odd.
Right.
And she comes across as having a little bit of an obsession with Kathy as well, which is, I do think is appropriate. There's this scene, this scrapbooking scene. Ooh. And I love a bit of craft, right? She does, she's got a doll's house that she's sort of built, making dolls for out of Kathy's real hair, which is creepy as fuck. But yeah, scrapbooking, like I love a bit of like paper craft, and I'm a miniaturist. I don't know if you know that about me, but I'm a miniaturist as well. I just don't have time for it. But I love that shit. And so I'm like, oh, these are my just my hobbies being represented. And now I'm reflecting, like, does that make me the creepy weirdo? Am I the problem? Like, is it me? I don't make dolls out of people's real hair. But, like, back then, that seems more valid because what you're not getting fucking polyester. So well, you kind of need real hair. Maybe horse hair might have been a better choice. I don't know. But, you know, she was bored. Anyway, there's this scrapbooking scene. She's made this scrapbook for Kathy, which is very sweet, a little bit much. But, like, it's really sexual. The scrapbook is really sexual. It's very hilarious. But anyway, that's by the by. But this is, like, where is this shit coming from? But again, it's we're talking Poe, right? It's, like, building to this cohesive theme. It was, of course, as I'm sure you know by now, very, very sexual, the whole thing. I sort of felt like that was missing from some of the other adaptations. Like, these people are toxic and obsessed with each other, like, as if sex isn't a part of that. Yeah. Like, but it's never kind of addressed anywhere else because, of course, the book didn't go there.
Yeah.
Because maybe it couldn't or I don't know, but like it's but between the lines.
It sounds like it's capturing like the emotional spirit of the book, if not like the literal word of what's happening, that's which I think is important.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I'm like, Emily Bronte would have fucking loved this. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That's what I felt.
She would have. Anyway. Why am I censoring myself?
Yeah, why are you censoring yourself?
Do you think she would have masturbated in the theater, Emily Bronte, if you had if you had resurrected her from the dead?
Would she have had an Alanis Morissette situation in the theater?
But she was both Alanis Morissette and her interlocutor in that moment.
Both Alanis Morissette and Uncle Joey from Full House. Is that what you mean?
Is that the context of that song?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm.
Dude had some hair.
No, that was Uncle Jesse, mate. Uncle Joey.
It was Uncle Uncle Joey.
Uncle Joey. Really? Yeah.
Shit.
Get it.
Shit.
Oh, shit. Yeah. He was a dick, apparently, to Alanis Morissette. So there you go. Anyway, that's a whole other by the by. Yeah. Completely fucked up, which the book was. It's so fucked up. It's so deliciously fucked up. And so that's what this movie does incredibly well.
I think it's what the people want.
It is what the people.
People crave some fucked up shit. Like, look, we were talking about off air. About the downfall of society.
Oh, don't. And,
we're not going back in. No, it's a shit conversation. But I'm just going to say, like, the Roman Empire, people wanted, like, the circus. And now people just want some fucked up sexual shit to happen.
They do. We need it. We deserve it. Speaking for myself.
I need it. Give it to me.
Oh, shit. I nearly fell out of my chair. What I wanted to say was go see Wuthering Heights.
Okay.
My new chair, I'm a little bit unstable.
I know. It's quite wobbly. I need to tighten all the screws in the chair.
Yeah,
the nuts.
Oh, dear. Okay. Screws and nuts. Okay. And
such as.
You've been getting worked up. Anyway.
I was just thinking about Emily Bronte.
We got a story very much like that as well in Flesh Fiction, except it was Jane Austen related.
Oh, yes. And we got a Poe one too.
Oh, we got so much great stuff.
Got some smut, didn't we?
We sure did. Okay. Speaking of, there was an aspect of Wuthering Heights as well that I loved. This kind of monster under the bed thing that was going on with Heathcliff, where in a very early scene when they're young children, he grabs Kathy and pulls her under the bed. Like, and it's like she's grabbed by a monster. And then later when she's losing the plot, she pictures his hand grabbing her from under her bed and he's not there, but that's what she's imagining. But yeah, like I really liked that. I liked this kind of idea that he's the monster under the bed. But it was very sexual and whatever. Anyway, okay, but with Jacob Elordi, because I do have some thoughts and feelings about him as Heathcliff. Okay.
Let's start with your thoughts and feelings in general, because he's a controversial character from a female gay perspective. I think like 50% of women are like, yeah, and 50% are nah.
I'm nah.
Okay.
I'm nah on Jacob Elordi, which I'm sure he's devastated about. He is, and I'm going to say this, too tall.
Oh, because he looks quite tall.
He's very tall. Like
a thing.
I know, it is a thing, right? The dossier is very much in favor of tall.
Yeah.
He is too tall. However, he's the exact same height as Ian Thorpe, and Ian Thorpe is the right height.
How tall is Ian Thorpe?
1.96 meters.
That's quite tall.
6'5".
How tall are you?
I don't know. Who cares?
All right.
No one gives a shit how tall I am. Average.
Okay. I just thought it might be something you knew.
167? 67-ish?
Okay.
Anyways, average is what I am. Mm. And yes, tall is hot. Tall is objectively hot. I'm sorry. It is. But he's too tall. But Ian Thorpe is right. And they're the same.
So how do you reconcile these issues that you've got?
First of all, none of your business.
Okay.
No, second of all, he's a bit lanky. He's lanky, which I don't object to really, but he's quite tall compared to Margot Robbie, and it's not in a kind of powerful way. It's kind of in a awkward way. Feels awkward, but he's very handsome in this. He's much more appealing in this than I've ever seen him in anything else. The accent helps for some weird reason, because I wouldn't normally think necessarily that a Yorkshire accent is up there, but it's better than a Queensland accent. Yeah. But yeah, no, he does the brooding thing well, and I think he's a decent choice for the role. Wow. Hello.
Wow, you're getting of sidetracked.
No, I've got
lonesome over there.
No, what I was thinking about him, because I'm watching him and he's kind of awkward and hunched over. He's hunched over a lot.
And he's so tall.
Yeah, I did mention that. Do I protest too much? Anyway, right, he's hunched over and whatever, and he's kind of dark and brooding and whatnot. And then, but then he has his glow up and he's still dark and he gets more fucked up. And I'm like, it just occurred to me in this flash, I'm like, this is what the Beast from the Beauty and the Beast should have turned into. Instead of the fucked up ugly thing that he turned into when he became a real man, Jacob Elordi is like the Beast come to life in man form. He's just, he was giving Beast.
All right. He was, he had that
but skinny,
animal energy.
Skinny Beast.
Skinny Beast, right.
Yeah. I would take that over the real Disney Beast. Man, Adam.
I can't even remember what the guy looked like.
Do you want to see? It's
Are you talking about the cartoon or the live action?
The cartoon, but the dossier-wise, universally despised.
Yeah.
Most ugly Disney prince of all time. He's ill on every level. Anyways, Jacob Elordi would make a lovely Beast. That's what I was getting at. Okay.
But if only you weren't so damn tall.
You know what I mean? Okay. Last thing. All right. So, of course, we have the big scene where Kathy dies, and she does die, right?
That's at the window? Is that
that's
still?
No. She's not at the window. Okay. All right.
Awkward.
But get this. There's this whole scene. It's very moving, and he does come and he does the line of, like, haunt me then, which he does badly, but I'll allow it. He didn't do that very well. But he's there, and he's lying next to her dead body, and, and he's remembering back to when they were kids, and it's this really emotional moment. And I am cackling.
Well, so hot, dead body, kids.
I know. But I was, like, cackling in the cinema, because in my head all I could hear was, don't you have somewhere to be?
That was my favorite line from the episode.
I know. And in fact, I couldn't even remember what you'd said, but in my head, it was the vibe of like, what the fuck? And Edgar Linton just coming in and just being like, are you right? Like, what are you doing? And if you don't get that reference, you do have to go back and listen to it.
You have to go back into the archives. I think it's episode 12, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, it's back there. And look, I was listening to it, like I said, between last night and today. And it was like at 3 a.m. So when I say between, it was. And there's like the whole first half hour is us talking about the very first.
Yeah.
Not quite right prize. Or the very first in the latest format. And yeah, we go on and on a bit. It's a bit boring. So skip that bit.
Yeah.
Because we're past that now.
We've moved on.
But but the Wuthering Heights chat's still kind of interesting.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun to go back and remember my thoughts and feelings. Yeah, so that's my little review. You've got to see it.
Have you – give me a rating. What's your total rating? Like thumbs up or thumbs down, let's start with?
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Massively.
Yeah.
You're going to fucking love
thumbs
it.
Thumbs up what?
Well, some egg. All right.
Okay. I can't wait. I don't need to see this egg come.
Maybe I've oversold it, but there's just some sexy egg. That's all I'm saying. All right. There's some sexy a lot of things in this movie. Mm. It was very graphic.
All right.
Mm.
So get a thumb up, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm. All right. Well, that's all we've got time for.
We couldn't possibly spend any more time on this topic.
We've got to move on to other topics. Well, do you have more?
I've got nothing. I'm spent.
You've spent your egg.
I'm finished.
Cadbury cream egg over there. All right. Thanks for joining us on The Niche.